Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Before we start today, there's a video you may have seen on Facebook. A video of a man running around desperately trying to help people. With their shopping, with their bus fare, anything really, he's just offering to be kind. Most people are bemused, but some actually accept the gesture, and both parties sort of revel in the kindness. The makers of that video, kindness.org, are a non-profit who want to know if you'll join their movement for a kinder world. The new site uniquely blends user action, technology, and funds independent, high-quality research to explore the impact of kindness and whether it can be used to solve some of society's most pressing issues. Visit kindness.org to find out more. Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome back to the Squawker Talker. I'm your host, Nick English. And today, since it's international break, we're going to take advantage of the extra time we've got to focus a little bit more on the European leagues. We're talking La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, Ligue 1, and a few other stories dotted around from some of the more obscure European leagues. I'm joined here today to discuss European football by Mohamed Butt, the freshly married Mohamed Butt. Congratulations, Mo.
Thank you, Nick. Freshly indeed, and happy to be back. Happy to be here.
Oh, fantastic. It's good to have you back. Also joining us is Greg Johnson, who freshly married from last year.
Yeah. It's still fresh. Yeah. Still good. Yeah,
fresh enough.
Yeah.
Fresh in the memory. Also joining us is freshly tanned George Elek.
Yeah. Not yet married.
Not yet married, but...
Hi, Nick. Yeah.
You went to Bali, didn't you?
I went to Indonesia.
Indonesia, okay.
So Bali was one of the places I went to. It was great.
Oh, right.
It was very hot. Yeah.
Yeah. For those of you who can't see George, he is beautifully tanned. he's a real mahogany, masterful show.
Thank you.
That's all right. You look great.
Mahogany, you're not quite sure if it's a compliment or not. That's a risky thing.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's a good point. I meant it as a compliment. I didn't mean it as a Ron Seal sort of insult.
Ron Burgundy.
Okay, let's start off with La Liga. Tale of the tape. How are the big clubs doing? Well, top of the table, it's Real Madrid, Mo. They're sort of in charge, but they've got some tricky ties coming up after the international break, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I mean, they've been doing their usual thing under Zinedine Zidane, where they don't really play that well and then they win anyway. It's their mental resilience is really incredible. You can only commend them. But of course, they've had their struggles. They went through a period of four draws, which is in a row, which included a Champions League game, which was their worst sequence of run in any competition for like 10 years since when Zidane was a player. So there's a lot of errors, a lot of issues in the Real Madrid squad, not least of all the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo looks like he's finally actually is declining. And the hierarchy of the club don't seem to want to acknowledge that. They've given him a massive new contract. That's going to hinder Gareth Bale's rising. Gareth Bale's their key guy, though. They could go either way right now. At some point, you think he could coagulate, they could get gel and become actually a good side, or it could just continue to ride on the assisting brilliance of Toni Kroos or something and then just peter out and get beat by good sides.
Yeah, Greg, I mean, Real Madrid have looked a bit over-reliant on Toni Kroos recently, especially since Luka Modric has been injured. They haven't really got a plan B without both their star central midfielders fit, do they?
Well, they shouldn't. They're Real Madrid. That's their whole philosophy. It's great, isn't it? Like, just get the best players in, rely on them to make magic happen. You wouldn't have it any other way, would you?
Yeah.
That's Real Madrid. It's like the antithesis of Barcelona. They're all about the collective and stuff like that. Real Madrid is just like, get the best players on the pitch, let them work magic. If they don't do it, they'll buy some more.
Win the Champions League anyway.
Yeah. George, it's still unbeaten as well, by the way, in La Liga this season.
Yeah.
Real Madrid. So,
well, that could be something.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's going to end, isn't it, this weekend?
Oh,
is it? Why would it end?
I think so. We're playing Atletico away. Obviously, Simeone is someone who, unlike that, does have, you know, is very good tactically. We'll go on with the plan. I'm not impressed with Real under Zinedine Zidane, I must say. As you say, they do just get thrown on the pitch without a plan. And they've got the players to beat weak teams. I think Casemiro is obviously a huge loss for them in centre midfield. I think that Kroos is almost wasted when he's playing that central role. I think it's much better when it's him and Modric either side of Casemiro because his passing ability is absolutely fantastic. He can break down play, but it's not really what he's best at. So yeah, I think it's going to come to an end this coming weekend. I think they'll struggle.
A bold prediction.
Well, Simeone's got a great record against them as well. You know,
and he's got an axe to grind.
Yeah, well, he always has an axe to grind, doesn't he? Really,
born with an axe to grind.
But I think this will be another case of Atleti trumping their, you know, their classically bigger City rivals.
Yeah, Mo, I mean, you mentioned before Real Madrid's mental resilience. How much of that is down to Zidane? I mean, he's known as a mentally tough character.
It's 100% down to Zidane. You look at them under Rafa Benitez, nothing is... Footballistically... That's not a word.
I like it, though.
Statistically, that nothing really changed between when Benitez was in charge and when Zidane was in charge, except, of course, Zidane was allowed to play Casemiro when Benitez wasn't for some... Well, Rafa Benitez, I guess, and Florentino Perez. But anyway, whatever. You know, tactically nothing, Zidane's not doing anything remarkable. He's not doing anything, in fact. He's just putting players on the pitch. He even said after a game last season when they lost, he said, oh, I brought James on. I wanted to see what would happen. Like,
I love that, though.
I love that. What would happen? But he's ability to motivate the players and get them to work hard. And I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo is tracking back more than he ever has, which actually is not really a good thing considering he's 31 now. But, you know, and now he used to save his energy. Now, he should have been doing this when he was 27. Anyway, again... No, Zidane's what he's injecting Madrid with is just incredible. They're so good, so mentally strong. They will always, no matter how gone they look, they'll find. It's almost like United under Fergie. Like, they'll just find a way to get it in.
Just find a way to get the goals. Greg, you mentioned before Barcelona being, you know, such a team about the collective. A bit of a transitional period for them at the moment, and Luis Enrique, he's struggling to, you know, keep it all together and keep the football as smooth as it was before. He's made some serious tactical shifts over the past couple of years, but this season they've sometimes looked a bit ponderous. And obviously the City game was, you know, a very unexpected win, although well-executed win.
I think Luis Enrique is feeling ponderous. He's kind of hinted at, you know, the possibility he might walk away from the job in the summer. I think Barcelona is such an intense club to manage and coach that it just... basically grinds the managers down. You saw what happened with Guardiola. He needed a sabbatical to kind of take some time out. And I think Enrique's always had a bit of... there's always been a bit of tension around Enrique at the camp now. I mean, even when Suarez and Messi switched and that made the kind of front three come alive, there was that was almost used as a stick to beat him with because he hadn't 100% been the author of that change. And the players were a bit reluctant to give him the credit for his role in it as well. So, yeah, things aren't right at Barcelona. But it's interesting that he's kind of brought through this like new generation of players that he's bought in rather than brought through Le Messier. I think they're all at least under 23 or under.
All the signs this summer were 23 or under, yeah. No, the players gave him the credit for that tactical switch. That was his idea. Messi and Suarez originally didn't want to do it. That was the problem. And then he said, okay, you know what? Let's change it around. Let's do that.
But there was that interview, wasn't there, where Messi, or I think it was even Messi or Suarez, they tried to take a bit of the credit for it a little bit at the time. But I think, George, you've been doing some interesting analysis on how they play at the back, which is...
Exactly. And you have to wonder now, I mean, looking at Barca, you wonder if Enrique's basically made that shift of keeping possession at the back purely so he can try and imprint his own style on the club, because they weren't regressing in any way. They were still beating teams with relative ease. They've still got Iniesta, who is kind of the genius in the middle of the park to be able to do that.
Well, not anymore. He's dead. So
that's true.
He's not actually dead. That'd be an awful thing to say, but he's out for a long, long
he's
time.
Out for a long time. But you know, Umtiti's coming in look really, really good. I mean, he looks like he's going to be kind of the future of that Barca back line. But yeah, I don't know. I agree. I think that it does look... it doesn't really feel like it's clicking there. Again, like Real, I'm not convinced by them at all. But you know.
But yet Real atop.
But yet Real
and
atop, and
Barcelona
second.
Are second.
Exactly.
Yeah, but what about Atletico? They're all the way down in fourth.
So Atletico are a team that I still fancy to come good this season. They've had a couple of uncharacteristic results in recent weeks. That game away at Sevilla that they lost 1-0. Is obviously a big kind of setback for them. But I still feel like this team, this Atleti team, maybe has more than previous Atleti teams. They can score more goals, as we saw by the 7-1 win against Granada a few weeks ago. I don't think that they've lost anything in that. You know, they're fourth currently, but I think as the season wears on, they'll still be up there challenging for that top spot. And I think because of the almost kind of transitional periods that maybe Barca are in and possibly Real, I think that this could be the year where Simeone gets his hand again on the La Liga title.
I think the thing with that, the problem that Atletico Madrid is, it's basically what happened to Stoke under Toni Pulis, is they were a really defensive side. No, it's the same thing. They're becoming more of an attacking side now, and the team doesn't... I mean, this is not... they're not going to have a revolution against Simeone, but they're struggling to figure out how to be an attacking team. Mm-hmm. They got caught at the back against Real Sociedad because they were pushing forward. They got ripped by Steven Nzonzi for that goal against Sevilla because they were pushing forward. Their line was so high, and they're not used to that. They're not used to playing that way, and I think that will catch them early on in the season. But it just depends, because the thing with Barcelona, the reason he switched to the possession at the back is to negate essentially what is the, well, I'll get onto that later, but the high press. And I think the fact that Iniesta is just getting very, very old,
yeah,
and the kind of midfielders that that Luis Enrique prefers clearly are not the kind of midfielders like Andres Iniesta. They're kind of midfielders like Rakitic. Ball players, technical players, but very physical, very athletic. I think he's trying to create some runners in the middle of the park, trying to stretch the play.
Andre Gomes.
Yeah, Andre Gomes, very, I mean, technically adept, very technically adept, but very, very, very adept at getting up and down the pitch. Very good shot on him, physical size. I think that's what Luis Enrique is trying to do. He's trying to add a bit of steel to the Barcelona midfield. And then I think, obviously, the idea of that is, of course, you've got Lionel Messi up there, who's just such a ridiculous... Right now, if you look at the way he's playing, he's basically Xavi and Lionel Messi from that he used to be in one player. It's kind of absurd. But, I mean, that's, you know, I think that gives Barcelona a chance. But for Barcelona, it has to click. The problem is right now, they've got all the squad depth, but the depth is kind of a little shallow on the adaptation period. You know, none of them have really adapted, settled in well, except Umtiti, who's been amazing.
Need a bit of time. Let's talk about some of the dark horses in the division, because there's quite a few. I mean, we have to start with Villarreal this season. I know one of your favourite teams around Europe.
I love
a really interesting team.
It's ridiculous the fact that they're still there. Normally you wouldn't say Villarreal a dark horse because they're you know, where they are, they're bottom of Champions League, top of Europa League place, you think that's standard for Villarreal. But the thing is, they lost Marcelino, their manager, and their sporting director this summer. They lost so much structure of the club. They lost Denis Suarez, who was one of their best players, to Barcelona. Cedric Bakambu hasn't really returned in the same way, you know. But yet they're still there. They're still finding a way to make it win. Samu Castillejo has stepped up. He was a really, really important buy from Malaga a year ago, and he's continued to rise and rise, and he's getting better and better. And they're just a club that just somehow just always seems to get it done. You know, you have to be impressed with them.
Greg, let's talk a little bit about Sevilla. Very interesting tactical setup, positively suicidal tactical setup at times.
Well, not really, actually.
The most interesting thing is that they seem to be playing Sami Nasri and Steven Nzonzi next to each other in a two-man midfield, which is so good.
Kind of
crazy.
Beautiful. But, I mean, the whole idea of like Jorge Sampaoli kind of being a bit too attacking, he's actually tempered his ideas a bit at Sevilla. No, he really has. From that, what was the crazy score on that opening game? Was it 6-3?
6-4. Yeah.
6-4, in fact, even more severe than I've just made out to be. But he's taken a step back a little bit, and he's still Sampaoli. It's still, you know, fast, direct, aggressive attacking football where you keep the ball on the deck, but you ping it about like a pinball machine.
Just ping, ping, ping.
It's fantastic. I mean, Nzonzi and Nasri are both often hitting over 100 passes per game. They're just basically like a centrifuge in the middle of the park.
It's the Marcelo Bielsa system where basically no matter what, you always have to have triangles all over the pitch, and that's why you can create these short parts. That's why they've got so many passes. You know, teams just can't get Sevilla. They're playing aggressive defensive football, but it's really offensive as well. It's so incredible the way they press, the way they run.
He basically has like seven attacking midfielders on the field at some point, and it's just it's beautiful. But they're so technically adept that even when you throw these players forward, they're so good at keeping the ball in tight spaces that it's not as kind of unsustainable as it might seem.
Until Barcelona went there just before the international break, Sevilla had won every single home game. Mm-hmm. Every single home game. They drew Juventus away from him. They're probably going to finish top of that Champions League group. They might actually be for real this time.
They gave Barcelona a very good game as well, when they got beat.
Yeah.
Took a very good performance from Messi to really put them to pieces.
Yeah.
George, let's talk a little bit about one definitely a surprise package in La Liga, Las Palmas. Who've are just another thrillingly entertaining team to watch.
Definitely. I mean, I think their surprise package comes in the form of their play rather than the actual results. I think before they beat Eibar, I think last time out, before that they were winless in their last six in the league. So maybe they are kind of sacrificing substance for style. But absolutely, I mean, another team is great to watch. I'm sure everyone's seen that Kevin Prince-Boateng goal from a couple of weeks ago that everyone's been waxing lyrical about.
Absolutely amazing.
Incredible goal. But yeah, they're another one. I think La Liga looks like a great league this season. It's kind of caught the imagination. Lots of these teams doing very well. Maybe weren't predicted to do so. And maybe there's teams at the top of the league maybe being weaker than they have been. Quick shout out, though. Another one is for Gary Neville, weirdly. Because you look back at last season and when he was being kind of absolutely destroyed for his performance as Valencia manager. But since then, Valencia have kind of continued to weaken.
Yeah.
Cesar Prandelli came in at the beginning of last month in October, hasn't improved it at all. They're languishing down at kind of the bottom end of La Liga, threatening with relegation. So you've got to maybe look back on that kind of managerial stint for Genev and think, you know, maybe it wasn't quite so bad as we thought.
Of the four managers they've had in the last two and a bit seasons, Gary Neville was comfortably the second best manager.
After Phil?
No, Paco Ayestarán was the best. Then Gary Neville, and then the other two are just terrible. And it's a structural, systemic problem at Valencia. There's
problems at the club.
There's something rotten at the club. It's decaying like the new Mestalla, just sitting there unused and unloved and just absolutely. It's just It's a real sad state of affairs, but it is what it is.
I mean, if he continues on this trajectory, he could be one of the best defensive midfielders in the world.
Yeah, Vieira-esque. George, who are the players who've been standing out for you?
As I said before, I think Umtiti looks like he's got the potential to be one of the kind of, well, he probably is already there in the top tier of centre-backs going. He's unbelievably comfortable on the ball, great in the air, very good in the tackle.
Quick.
Very quick.
Lightning.
Very, very quick. And he looks like someone who... Yeah, Barca can be really excited to have in their defence. They probably need a freshening up their defence for a while now.
Yeah.
And he's the person, I think, to come in and do that, I'm sure.
You just made me think about an Umtiti Koscielny defence for France. That is pacey.
If Piqué can get Umtiti and Piqué fit at the same time, they could get stuck to put some wins together. No, the key players for me, I mean, it's going to be kind of boring to say it, but it's Messi and Griezmann. Griezmann has been unreal. He's got six assists. He's got six goals, four assists. He's constantly... being decisive for Atletico when they need him. And Messi is just, like I've said, he's Messi from last season, the winger, the goal scorer, but he's not being a creator this much this season. That's gone to Neymar, the final third creator. All the stats point to Neymar as the creative force of the side, but Messi is doing the unheralded Xavi-esque work, getting the ball to Neymar, and then Messi's going up the other end of the pitch and then scoring the chances Neymar's creating. He's just obscene. He looks like an absolute idiot, but he's got a Timmy Comerford tattoo. He's got on his
You're not
leg.
Tempted to dye your own hair blonde?
Not in the slightest. No? You know, his beard's looking good at least, but the rest of it just, oh my goodness, what are you doing, Leo? But best player in the world by far.
He must love playing in this new system because having the players pressing the defence instead of... He's been playing for however long, used to being cramped into tight positions, having to spin his way out of it, and now he's getting the ball in these deep positions, being able to turn and just fly.
I think he's better than ever. I know that's a big shout, but I just love watching Messi now. It's a bit like Ozil this season in the Premier League. It just feels like he's got more space to do things, more freedom almost to roam all over the pitch where he wants to be.
That's where Luis Enrique has to have credit, because he's found this way of giving Messi essentially...
New lease of life.
Yeah.
New lease of life. What about young players? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Sergio Roberto before the start of the season, Denis Suarez.
Sergio Roberto is 24. I don't know if you call him a young player, but...
Youngish.
Yeah, he's very good. I'm very impressed with him.
Who'd be the young standout stars for yourself?
They're all Real Madrid players, actually, weirdly enough. Although only two of them actually playing for... One of them actually playing for Real Madrid, the rest of them aren't.
Okay.
Marco Asensio is just absolutely ridiculous. Worth the hype, man. Scored in his Champions League debut, La Liga debut, Supercopa debut, and Copa del Rey.
Spanish
debut.
Rashford.
He's just, everyone worried he was going to get a bit Canales, when they sent him out on loan last year to Espanyol. And then there's also, the other two guys not playing for Real Madrid right now. Diego Llorente on loan at Malaga, centre back, very good. He's 23. He's pushing what you call a young player, but he's looking really solid, getting some really good defensive action numbers on Scorca's performance rater. He's doing a good job. He's looking really good. I don't know if he's necessarily going to be make it at Real Madrid though, because of course, Jesus Vallejo in. We'll get to the Bundesliga later, but there's also Marcos Llorente in defense. This is the guy who they should have kept, by the way. He's better than Casemiro. He's a defensive midfielder for Barcelona Alaves. He's a really, really good player. He was one of the best players on the park when they beat Barcelona at the Camp Nou, which was a ridiculous result, but. They were great and he was great. Mm-hmm. And had Madrid not put in that little cowardly clause that he can't play against Real Madrid, I'm pretty sure Alaves would have took something off Madrid as well.
Coward clause.
Santa
Claus is long lost. Doesn't
turn up at Christmas.
Sid Lowe has another name for it, but it's a family pod, so I can't really
mention it. Thanks, but, Sid.
Yeah. Real Madrid have got these really good young players. It's just a matter of now, can they bring them into the team and actually put a system around them, because they could be really good for years to come now with this side.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's move on to Serie A. In terms of top of the table, it's unsurprising, Greg, to see Juve at the top once again. They bought the best centre midfielder from the team that was third in Roma by buying Miralem Pjanic. They bought... the best striker in the league, Gonzalo Higuain, so it's no surprise to see that.
There's a lot of him.
Yeah, there's a lot of Gonzalo. He came back with extra Gonzalo from his holiday. I guess the real story is that it's been a lot tighter at the top, and also AC Milan's resurgent, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think all those signings were kind of made, especially Higuain, were kind of signed to just get the league by default to some extent, and then he can focus all the talent on trying to get the Champions League, because that's the prize they really want now. They've basically got Italy sewn up, and they have done for quite a few years now. I think you look at the teams coming behind them, and Roma have done really well to replace Pjanic with Paredes, who's been absolutely fantastic this season. And it is grown up to be quite an interesting title race, although I do still think Juventus are very much likely to just swipe it, really. Roma, you've got to shout out to Roma. They're starting to have a few injuries pile up, like Florenzi's now been ruled out with a cruciate ligament, which is very sad to see. But they've created more chances at any side per game across Europe's top five leagues this season. They're more creative than Liverpool, which is quite a thing to be at the moment. Spalletti
is just... Mo Salah, the star as well.
Yeah, Mo Salah's been absolutely fantastic for them. And Spalletti's just... We all love Spalletti, don't we? He's got his systems and he's got his ways of bringing players into play. And he's still using Totti as well. Totti's still having an impact at the grand old age. He's 40 now, isn't he? So it's just fantastic.
Don't retire, Francesco, please.
Please never do.
never retire. George, AC Milan is an incredible story in terms of, you know, how they've just decided, you know what, this isn't working out.
Yeah.
So they don't really have the money to buy the same sort of players that Juve do. They don't have the assets to sell and invest. So they've just gone... I think see what's knocking about in the youth academy.
I think that's exactly it. It's easy to kind of football fans looking in from the outside to forget that about AC Milan. You know, you think of this kind of footballing giant, but actually these days, you know, they don't have that, as you say, the power maybe Juventus have. Even their neighbours, Inter, who are obviously struggling this season, they have far more financial clout. But as you say, the young players coming through, everyone knows about Don Muro, of course, who's their keeper, the age of... Is he 18 yet? I don't think he is.
I don't think he is 18.
So he's still 17 years of age.
It feels like he's been 17 for years.
Obviously, then they beat Juve at home earlier in the season as well. Mm-hmm. I think Juve actually are unbeaten in Serie A, except in Milan, where they've lost both games.
Yeah,
which is nice. And another team that I think is a really nice story is Lazio, who are another team who, you know, it's easy to forget that actually Lazio used to be, you know, an absolute superpower within European football. You know, there's a time in the 90s where they're absolutely brilliant. You've got Simeone Inzaghi, who's part of that team, who's now their manager there, who got the job at the back end of last season. Then Bielsa got hired, then sacked after a week, which meant that Inzaghi kept the
classic
kept
Bielsa
the job. Yeah, I mean, they've only lost twice a season against the previously mentioned Milan and Juventus. And the last time they went to Napoli, which, as we all know, is a very tough place to go, and got a 1-1 draw. In a couple of weeks, we've got the Rome derby at the Stadio Olimpico between Rome and Lazio, which should be a fascinating game because they're two teams who look like... You know, they may... Serie A could be competitive this year, and their two teams, along with Milan, who look like likely to make that happen.
One team that definitely isn't competitive this season is Inter Milan, Mo, who just seem to lurch from disaster to disaster.
Valencia-esque, you could say.
Yeah, the latest under Frank de Boer, and there's all sorts of issues with Mauro Icardi and the ultras. It's just not going well for Inter Milan,
yeah,
is it?
It's Valencia-esque. There's something wrong with the club. They've got investment, they've got money now, and then they came out and said, okay, we're going to commit to the Ajax model of doing things, we're going to hire Frank de Boer. And then they're not committing to the Ajax model of doing things at all. They haven't signed him any players that can do what he wants, except Ever Banega. And they've just got him this squad of mercenaries that they've inherited from the last few years. Mm-hmm. Just nobody really cares about Inter except Mauro Icardi, who has managed to enrage the fans so much that they've now turned on him. So now he's lost all the confidence. He was brilliant in great form, and then he had this spat with the ultras, and now he's lost all his confidence.
Now they're getting beaten by Southampton on the regular.
They're just going to keep going down and down and down until Diego Simeone comes and saves them, basically.
The plan.
He said he wants to manage them, and they have money. So basically, at some point in probably the end of this season, maybe definitely the end of next season when his contract runs out, Simeone's going to go, all right, peace out, Atletico. All right, come here, Inter. I'll save you.
That'd be great to watch.
And interesting, I mean, their new manager was given an 18-month contract. Has anyone ever been given a less apt 18-month contract in the history of football? I mean, that guy is not going to be there this time next year.
He's there until Simeone's ready for
the
job.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Pellegrini model, innit?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. One team that we haven't spoken about who are actually doing surprisingly well this season, Greg, is Torino.
Oh, yeah.
They've defied a lot of expectation. Obviously, the main headline surrounding them was that surprise deal for Joe Hart, who's been decent-ish. He's been doing well in fits and starts, as probably you'd expect for Joe Hart. For Joe Hart. But Torino themselves doing pretty well, up into seventh, is it?
Yeah, and they've got a great young team as well. I mean, the idea of getting Hart in was to kind of give them some ballast in defence so they can actually have a proper run on Europe this season. Mm-hmm. That's their plan. That's their goal. They've got guys like Belotti up front has been brilliant. I think he is currently... No, he's not a top... No, he's got 8 goals, tied with Mo Salah as the joint fourth highest scorer in the league.
Not bad.
Not bad. And Ljic is currently the left winger. He's currently top of our performance score, if I may... point that out. And also Iago Falque in midfield is a creative genius of their attack as well. So they've got a lot of things going for them. they're always Torino, so it's always likely to go a bit wrong for them because they do seem to just, you know, go. It seems to go bad for them when it shouldn't, really.
Yeah.
So hopefully they kind of break that curse this year and they can kind of actually push on and get some European football because they actually play some really good stuff, got some interesting players, so it'd be good to see them rewarded for that.
So many big clubs in Italy, you don't know where to look sometimes. George, are there any young players that have stood out to you in Serie A? I mean, recently the Italy team has seen a new influx of players. Obviously, you mentioned Donnarumma earlier. Yeah. Anyone else really catching your eye?
So we've also got Locatelli as well, who similarly, like Donnarumma, came through the youth team and scored that incredible winner against Juve, which really kind of brought him onto the world stage with a bang. So it's... you've got to be really excited about those two players, both for Milan and for Italy in general, because I think both the national team and the club both need some kind of young stars to kind of re-energize Italian football, exactly. And it looks like they've got them, and there are more players coming through that youth team as well. So.
Yeah, Mo, Greg, any young players that stand out to you guys in the Serie A?
I mean, loads, because that's kind of what Serie A is becoming now. It's almost becoming a little bit Bundesliga to some extent in terms of they're bringing players through that are quite interesting and putting them in, giving them a bit of responsibility in the first team to see what happens. Dennis Prayer, who people may know if they're Football Manager players, is a bit of a legend from like, he's now at Sampdoria getting games. Adam Nagy from the Hungarian national team, who everyone's a fan of, joined the Euros. He's also at Bologna, so they're two names to watch out for. Interesting players. But I just say, I mean, guys that have been in the Serie A for a couple of seasons now, you've got Benassi as well, Diarra, Lazio, who's been very impressive in midfield.
Dybala is still pretty young at Juve.
Yeah. He is, He's had a kind of a connoisseur season so far. Not maybe getting as many goals as people want him to do, but yeah, exactly. He's been very good in the kind of the build-up play. Bernardeschi at Fiorentina as well. And also Lorenzo Pellegrini, who people might have seen in the France-Italy under-21 match the other day. He's been very good in midfield as well. Berardi, sadly, has been injured. Only played two games. Been very impressive, but without him, Sassuolo have fallen all the way down.
Yeah,
but
Sassuolo
hopefully he gets fit again too soon, because he's a very interesting player.
One-man team or what?
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the Bundesliga, which is, frankly, baffling league this season, George.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess where we need to start is that Red Bull Leipzig. That's what anyone's talking about.
Yes, yeah. It's an incredible story with Leipzig. As it's been commonly documented, they are the least popular team in probably the world, it sounds like, because of Red Bull's involvement.
Whereas other Bundesliga teams don't have corporate owners,
they don't have any
money.
The Leverkusen fans obviously don't see the.
Yeah, of course, and Wolfsburg have no corporate entity at all.
Hoffenheim, anyone?
one player. I mean, that Hoffenheim are a team I really want to talk about in kind of more detail. But one player who is really exciting for Leipzig is Naby Keita, who's a 21-year-old centre midfielder. He's already scored 3 goals this season. Statistically, he looks like a complete midfielder. The numbers are incredible. 50 completed passes per 90 minutes at 81%, 3.3 interceptions per 90, and 3.5 take-ons completed. Like he can dribble, he can break play down, he can score goals, he can pass. At the age of 21, he looks like a really exciting player and someone that we can look forward to watching even more.
Yeah, Greg, in terms of Bayern, I mean, they're unbeaten. So Red Bull Leipzig, actually, weirdly enough. But Bayern, top of the league, unbeaten. Lewandowski's firing goals left, right and centre. Ancelotti was just brought in to win the Champions League, wasn't he? There's no real other plan there. It's all pretty much standard.
Like what I was saying with Juventus, I think the idea is we can kind of get the league come what may, really. So let's just get the guy who's great at winning European titles and see what happens. And I think even though they're level pegging with points at the moment for Leipzig, I think you look at the depth Dortmund have got. Thomas Müller hasn't even scored a league goal yet. They're going to win.
Playing at the moment.
But he's I think he's top of their chance created, though, isn't he? He's still been a... So, but that's the thing, they've just got so much more to come in. So, they're going to win it again, I think. That might upset people, but I think they are also playing some quite good football. More countery than domination-y.
Carlo Ancelotti doesn't win leagues, man. He's won 3 in his entire...
Oh, he's going to win this one.
He's won 3 in his entire career as a coach, and he's managed almost exclusively the biggest or most finance, best finance side
more Champions League
in his
titles.
Country. He's got more Champions League titles. Yeah, this guy failed to win the league with PSG. I mean, what more do you need to say?
That was funny.
Points tally as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Olivier Giroud's coming out party in 2008-09. Fantastic stuff. I like Dortmund. I'm interested in Dortmund. I think Tuchel has so many great ideas. I think he's just a bit too overzealous with them. Like,
You know, his pressing system is brilliant. The way he brings the youngsters is brilliant. Weigl is, I mean, well, we'll get to that later. Yeah, the way that he's switched Dortmund from a 4-2-3-1 to a 4-3-3, but it can be a 4-2-3-1 in defensive phases if it has to be.
Or a 4-1-4-1 going forward.
It's such a fluid shape, and there's just one guy in the middle of it. That's Julian. Okay, seriously, I'll get back to him in a minute. You know, and that he's really elevated the game with guys like Gonzalo Castro. You know, they're really looking good. The only problem I would say is that he's too gung-ho. He sends players forward with ridiculous abandon. And, you know, and Mark Bartra, who is the big signing at the back, Mark Bartra's not a very good defender. He's, like, average. Just because he's a good-looking player for Barcelona doesn't mean he's Gerard Piqué, you know.
I don't know if that's fair saying he's too gung-ho, because I'd say the thing that Tuchel has brought to Dortmund is that they don't throw as many players forward because they don't have to, as he did under Klopp. It's a bit more sophisticated way of attacking. Like, the balance, as Mo says, with Weigl at the back, kind of helping the tempo of the play by just making sure the ball's in the opposition's half more because he can just ping it back there, has been immense. It's actually the injury of Castro, I think, has been a massive blow to them. He's still quite an underrated player, I think. And they're apparently going to be chasing De Hood in January now. Going to sign him, hopefully, with a load
Storm.
Yeah, they're going to apparently pay €15 million and throw in Nuri Sahin to get him. And I think if you get into Hood, he could definitely step into Castro's shoes, and then they could be the force they need to be.
You can see why they need that, because, I mean, against Real Madrid in the Champions League, when they drew 2-2 and it was very commendable, but frankly, if Real Madrid were actually a good team, they would have lost that game like 5-2. They were so exposed by the counter-attack, by direct, fast counter-attacking. And, I mean, you know, you have to wonder if they can last the season playing that way. I hope they can, because I love Tuchel. I love the way that he plays football. I love the way he brings the youngsters. And, I mean, how can you not love a team with Ousmane Dembele and Julian Weigl in the same side? I mean,
interestingly, though, I think the German teams that are in the Champions League are struggling to cope with the fixture congestion at the moment. If you look of Dortmund's last six games, only three have been in the league. And their last result where they beat Hamburg 5-2. They were winless in four before that, and they'd had to actually rest or maybe even drop Dembele and Götze. So it was actually Aubameyang up front on his own. And you have to wonder if this coming Saturday with a big game against Bayern, if they'll employ that tactic again and not play those three up front, if they'll go for that Aubameyang playing up top on his own with kind of a more settled kind of 3-2 behind him. And it's also enabled... I think the competitive nature of the Bundesliga is now far fiercer. We've already spoken about Leipzig, Hoffenheim, another team who are absolutely fantastic, also unbeaten as well. And with this kind of 29-year-old baby Mourinho, they call him, I think.
Yes, we should mention this point. George Ellick has just been wanting to talk about Hoffenheim since he got up this morning.
I'm absolutely desperate to. Julian Nagelsmann.
Nagelsmann.
Well, because I think I've noticed that Spartak has come kind of more in the public eye, and I want to get my foot in before it does.
Okay. the mic is yours.
And one player in particular who is incredibly exciting, that's Kerem Demirbay, who is a Turkish, German, another one of those German-born Turkish players, who looks absolutely phenomenal. I mean, they brought him in from Hamburg last season, where he, I think, only made two senior appearances. He was on loan at Fortuna Düsseldorf in the Bundesliga 2 last year, scoring a few goals. He's a centre midfielder who has scored 3 goals a season and 2 assists, but he's incredible to watch. Plays centre midfield, can drift out wide, pull players wide, go down the flanks and get balls in. He reminds me a little bit of Riyad Mahrez in the style of play, although he's a central player, and he looks... He's a player that, you know, Nagelsmann, the manager's plucked from absolutely nowhere, and he already is looking like he's kind of performing at elite level already. And I think the Hoffenheim team have a few players like that as well. You've got Kramaric, who was at Leicester last season and for the last couple of years, who they brought in from relative obscurity. He had a kind of average loan spell there last year. He's come in, scored 3 goals, made 5 assists for them. There are echoes of Leicester in the way they play as well. You know, they've just, you know, the story's there. Nagelsmann came in last year and saved them from relegation, winning 7 of their last 14 games when they're 1 point off the bottom. I'm not going to say lightning strikes twice, but there are echoes of the same story and the counter-attacking way that they play as well. And I just kind of implore everyone who's listening to kind of look at the Hoffenheim story, look at the way they play, look at their players and get excited about what's happening.
So what you're saying is it's going to happen.
I'm saying I'm excited. I'm excited to sit here in a month. And
they're only 4 points off.
They're also unbeaten as well.
Because the thing is, since they had a kind of start to season where they drew a lot of games, and actually since basically Demirbay came in, they've actually, I think, won 5 and drawn 1 of their last 6. They're actually now hitting form. So now is the time to kind of to get excited.
Lump on.
I didn't say that.
do you feel better now?
Yeah, it's a weight off my mind. I can now go and write my article in.
Feel good about yourself.
Knowing I've put it on
very, tape. Very interesting team. Three teams at the top of the Bundesliga that are unbeaten. In terms of another surprise package, in terms of how poorly they're doing, Greg, is Hamburg, who until that aforementioned game against Hoffenheim actually had more red cards than goals this season. They've completely fallen apart, haven't they?
It sounds like they're doing an Inter Milan, which is they're doing a Valencia, which is they're doing a Man United. They're just one of those historic clubs that just can't look after themselves. So, yeah.
Yeah.
There's not much more to say. They're absolutely terrible at just organising themselves.
Interestingly, they've had 89 shots this season at a shot accuracy of 25%.
Oh, four. Sounds like their transfer strategy.
That's Cristiano Ronaldo-esque.
Yeah, it is. Ronaldo free kick-esque, yeah.
In terms of key players, who have been the key players for you guys in the Bundesliga?
Weigl.
Weigl for Mo.
Just capital letters, hashtag Weigl.
Julian.
It's just absolutely ridiculous. I can't remember being this impressed by a young controlling midfielder since Sergio Busquets. Just like, he's so good. Mm. He reads the game so well. He can make tactical fouls when he has to. His positioning is so adept at moving where he has to help the ball circulation. He knows how to work for his team. He can make those Michael Carrick-esque slide doors within the line passes. It's just an absolutely incredible, complete midfielder. And I mean, I'm really sad because Bayern are going to buy him in like 3 years and it's just going to be so depressing.
Greg, any shouts for players?
I'm going to do a bit like Sevilla. I'm going to hit two midfielders again. Javi Martinez and Thiago Alcantara. Thiago Alcantara, just for me, I just love watching him play. He's probably one of my favourite midfielders in the entirety of the game.
Bit of a forgotten man, isn't he?
Well, not this season. With all those injuries. He's absolutely smashing it. He looks absolutely brilliant under Ancelotti. And also Joshua Kimmich as well. He's gone from being a centre-back to a right-back to now a goal-scoring midfielder. And he's been great as well. I mean, we've got 23 and 23 coming up at the start of next year. And I'm not going to put any money on it, but I'm going to put some money on the idea that he might be quite high up there. Because he is absolutely superb. And yeah, Javi Martinez, great to see him back in his natural role as a defensive midfielder, and also absolutely nailing it. So yeah, that's why I think Bayern are going to ride to victory, because they've got the players, they're all playing in their kind of natural positions under Ancelotti, and for at least one season I think that'll be enough to make it click.
George, any key players that don't play for Hoffenheim?
Well,
I've already mentioned Naby Keita.
You've already mentioned Naby Keita.
If I can mention one more Hoffenheim player, then it would be actually a really interesting talent who came through their youth system called Niklas Schull, who is a 6'5", 21-year-old centre-back who looks really, really special.
Chelsea are interested in him as well,
apparently.
He's
been linked to a few Premier League clubs already. He looks like a proper player, they say. and he's got by far and away the best tackle success rate, basically, in the league of anyone, with 72%. So.
Yeah. Very good.
Also, Kosterman and Verno for Leipzig. They've got a lot of talent there.
There's a lot of talent going on.
I was also just going to add Jonathan Tarr, also all caps, also hashtag.
Also linked with Liverpool this week.
Utterly ridiculous. It's so weird, but because of Rafa Varane, Marquinhos, and Aymeric Laporte and Umtiti, their media profiles, I guess, or prevalence, no one's really talked about Jonathan Tarr. This guy, I think he's 19 or 20 years old. I think he's still 19, actually.
He's so big.
He's so powerful, and he's so adept at using that power. Chris Smalling is a big guy, for instance, but has no idea how to use his strength whatsoever. Jonathan Tarr is a big guy, but his timing and his technique of his tackling is outrageously good. He knows how to dominate their opponents without actually having to foul them. If Liverpool can get hold of him, and they are laughing like wider than Jurgen Klopp's biggest laugh so far this season, because he's absolutely incredible. He's going to be one of the best defenders in the world, no question about it. And just he's waiting for the right stage to burst out, which obviously isn't going to be Leverkusen. So
yeah, Leverkusen. We were going to talk about young players, but pretty much most of the players that you brought up were under the age of 25.
That's so the Bundesliga.
That's the Bundesliga for you. Final league that we want to cover, Ligue 1. And the only place to start is the dark horse / the surprise package, Greg. It's OGC Nice.
Balotelli, he's back, isn't he?
Balotelli's
has
back.
Has he ever been away? Yeah, he has. But he's been fantastic. And I know I've gone for the aesthetics on this pod, but I just love watching Nice play as well. They just play lovely football. Fantastic. They're never really, you can't really count them out. They just seem to come back, or they can run at you, or they can just do whatever they want, really. And they're just a really fun team to watch. And I think Cyprian in midfield is another good player who's, it's just all working for them at the moment. I really hope they can keep it up. It might be another Montpellier we'll have to see, but it's against them to do it, but I hope they do it and get towards the end of the season.
They're still top by three. They've only lost one game. They've got an 18-year-old who barely had a professional contract called Malang Sarr, a centre-back, bossing things for them.
They're brilliantly, really. I mean, they're another one. I think a lot of the kind of... A lot's written about Balotelli, and rightly so, but they're a team who's they're performing across the park, to be fair. And I think the managerial situation there is very interesting as well. Claude Puel, who is now at Southampton, was obviously laid the blueprint there. And they still play a very similar way, where they retain the ball at the back. I think they are second for possession in the league, up at 55%. But yet seventh for chances created and top for shot accuracy and second for goals scored. So, you know, they're clinical. They keep hold of the ball. They don't really let the opposition kind of get behind them. Quite similar to how Southampton are playing now under Puel. And Lucien Favre has come in and he's just made them kind of more potent in attack, I think. And they've made them kind of better going forward in effect.
Yeah, I think splitting the duties of Ben Arfa into two players, Belonda and Balotelli, I think it's really helped them. I think it was before, when it was all on Ben Arfa, he was the top goal scorer, probably the best player in France, not named Zlatan, last season. You know, now you kind of went as he went as a team, whereas now it's Balotelli up front, it's Belonda. You know, you have more, the quality is spread across the board.
More variety.
Yeah, I hope they do it. As much as I love Unai Emery and would love him to succeed at PSG, it would be so great if Nice won.
You mentioned PSG. They've been struggling post-Zlatan to a certain degree. I mean, Cavani seems to miss five chances, score one. But PSG don't seem to be able to sustain the same sort of dominance that they have on the game recently. Are they bored of the league?
No, it's not they're bored of the league. They just didn't replace Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Edison Cavani makes Andy Cole look like Ruben Nistelrooy.
Hello.
You know, he's wasteful. You know, it just the guy is not. He's every time you watch him play, he has a good game. If you have, you think, oh, killer striker, world class striker. But then that's one game, and then like the next six, he'll just be an absolute donkey. He's got such technique and ability. It's like, why doesn't it work? There's no reason for it. He's even playing in a central role now. He's got the number nine shot on his back. He's got a manager who speaks the same language as him. There should be no excuse for him now, but yet he's just not putting it all together. I just think
he often looks like Bambi. Like he, you know, with the ball in the air, that you're going to struggle to find anyone better. If I was a centre back playing in Europe, who I wouldn't want to come up against in an aerial battle. Yeah, with the ball at his feet, I just don't think he's very dangerous. Like he's quick, fine, he can get him behind, but
he's a klutz, isn't he? He's a klutz.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
Andy Cole. Not having that.
Andy Cole, that was the famous thing about Andy Cole, didn't he? He needed seven chances to score one.
That's what Glenn Hoddle said, and he was wrong. So this is another podcast, but I'm not letting that stand. But
Greg looks piqued about Andy Cole.
Of course they have Andy Cole.
I think the loss of Zlatan, just you know, one stat comparing PSG season this season to last season, is that this season they're averaging 8.92 shots in the area per game. Last season it was 10.4. So that's showing that they're not getting the ball into position to score as much as they were last season, and therefore
They're also missing David Luiz at the back, who used to bring the ball out of the back quite well.
He didn't really play that much last season, did he?
They all had their knocks, but he basically, you know, they're missing that kind of presence. And the midfield has been completely reorganised, whereas Blanc, of course, famously continued that three defensive midfielder approach. You know, Unai Emery's trying to reconfigure it. He brought in Koscielny, trying to build the midfield around him, sort of. He's completely changing the way the club is been run and been set up, because before it was nearly all on the whims of basically Zlatan.
Yeah,
you know, and now they've got to actually make a team. So yeah, we'll see what they do.
Greg, another team, maybe a surprise package, but not really that much of a surprise package, is Monaco. They're doing very, very well this season, and with a reborn Radamel Falcao, who's finally back from
in your face, Lou Van Gaal.
Yeah,
and Jose Mourinho,
and English football, literally, because he did a number on Spurs, didn't he? In the Champions League. I mean, it just kind of fits the trend of what we talk about for all these leagues, about teams that are kind of pulling a load of youngsters together around a very like positive idea of how to play, with managers that are prepared to give them a chance and take risks on them. And okay, Falcao's the veteran of the team, but Monaco are filled with young talents. Bernardo Silva is finally starting to really flourish in that team. And when we interviewed Deco last year, he was saying, oh, he's the next guy out of Portugal, it's going to be massive. And he's showing why now. He's really coming to the fore. If it's not Nice, I'd love it to be Monaco, put it that way. I think both are really like admirable sides in how they go about doing things and South where they play.
So. Yeah. Scored so many goals, Monaco, as well. Yeah. Yeah. 36 goals scored already this season, I think.
Yeah. One team that's not scoring that many goals is previously the most dominant team in France, George. It's Lyon. They're struggling to get the goals. I mean, whenever we tweet about Alexandre Lacazette, all anyone says is it's only penalties. He only scores against Farmers, you know, all this sort of stuff, which is obviously nonsense. But Lyon nowhere near as dominant as they have been in previous seasons.
Maybe Lacazette thinks he actually did go to Arsenal, and that's why he stopped scoring. But it doesn't look great for them. It doesn't look like they're going to be involved in that shake-up towards the end of the year. And it's a shame for them because, you know, they've always been waiting for however many seasons for PSG to slip up. Mm. And PSG have slipped up and they're not there to pick up the pieces. So it looks like it's going to be other teams who are going to profit from that.
It is. Let's move on to some stories from around European football, which have been particularly interesting. Greg, Feyenoord have been doing one hell of a job in the Eredivisie under Giovanni van Bronckhorst, haven't they? And we obviously saw they were very, very impressive in the Europa League against Manchester United. Mm. Everyone obviously had a go at Mourinho and said, oh, you were poorly tactically set up. But Feyenoord just basically did a job on United. They've been really good this season, haven't they?
Yeah, massively. And I don't want to repeat what I just said about Monaco, but another team with a lot of young players. They're playing a positive system under a manager that will give them chances and take gambles upon their talent. Yeah, Feyenoord, they've got guys like Rick Karsdorp and Terence Kongolo. They've got loads of more great players. They've got another, a bit like Falcao, another elder statesman up top who's doing things for them, Dirk Kuyt. And yeah, I think that the loss they suffered before the international break was their first one for, what, 21 games in the league, I think?
First, it was their first dropped points in Eredivisie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Of the season. So.
100% record until then. Yeah. But yeah, they're doing fantastically well. And it's also great, on a kind of a retrospective note, to see a kind of a former great player of the 90s, noughties, kind of, you know, bringing it to the dugout now with Giovanni van Bronckhorst. Because who didn't like van Bronckhorst?
Well, yeah, following the footsteps of Phil Crocker.
Yeah, exactly. And De Boer and all the other rest of them. So it's great.
Dirk Kuyt's probably going to follow him. Yeah. Is Dirk Kuyt older than van Bronckhorst? It must be close.
he looks older than him. I don't know if he actually is.
But he's not really even playing up front. He's playing this kind of like deep line playmaker.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, I would never have thought that was going to happen.
He play everywhere, can't he?
But then he played wing back at the World Cup. This guy can. Yeah. If you asked him to be like an industrial welder, he'd do it. If you asked him to be an astrophysicist,
not expect that position.
And he'd be absolutely incredible.
In a football shirt.
This guy can do anything, man, honestly.
Loving a bit of Dirk Kuyt. Another fascinating story is from the Turkish league, Mo. Istanbul Basaksehir. I don't know if I'm even close to pronouncing that right. Apologies to Turkish listeners. Yeah. But they are unbelievably top of the league with Besiktas second, Galatasaray third, and Fenerbahce in all the way in fifth.
I mean, it must suck to be a Fenerbahce fan. That's all I'm saying. You know, they look. The big guns of Galatasaray have often, it's been a kind of SPL environment where they've sort of functioned at the top of this feeder system almost. But, you know, they had to be well maintained financially to keep dominating the way they were. But they weren't. And then as their quality fell off and they start getting beaten in Europe and stuff, you know, they moved away from top quality Turkish players. They started getting in more second rate foreign players. And it just drained the quality. And Besiktas, of course, won the league last year off the back of Mario Gomez's goals. Mm-hmm. He's left now. They've carried on going. Istanbul Besiktas. Said that wrong. You know,
it's a tricky, it's a tongue twister.
BB.
BB, yeah. Istanbul BB.
Not if you're Turkish. That's a nickname, BB. Yeah. So we just go with BB.
You know, they've not really got many stars in the team, but I mean, of course, they've got Belhaj Özgül Emre, you know, former Galatasaray legend, you know, and Newcastle legend. Why is everyone laughing? Anyway, yeah.
It was the way you remembered it. Just like, hang on.
Also, I'm not sure legend's the right word there.
He's the captain. He's wearing the number five shirt. You know, he's running the team. And I think that. His presence of a leader in that squad, you know, to echo what Greg has been saying about five times now, you know, young, you know, put players around, you know, he can get you places.
Yeah.
They were fourth last year as well, so it's not like a
one-off.
Yeah, they seem to be, this is their trajectory.
Champions League, here they come. But before we move on to the third story around Europe, a bit of honesty is when I was researching sort of this pod, I asked the guys, you know, for some stories, and George Ellett came up with something so niche that, I mean, I have no idea what it is. So
OGC,
I'm just going
to OGC niche.
All OGC niche, fantastic.
I'm suddenly realizing that all I'm doing this pod is talking about very kind of on teams that don't normally get much of a mention on
the
podcast.
The only thing I know is that it's to do with Czech football.
Yeah, so it's a team called FC Fastav Zlin in the Czech First Division, so the top tier in the Czech League. To kind of put it in context, the Czech League has been very predictable since its inception in 1993-1994 season. Sparta Prague obviously won it the most, 11 times. Viktoria Pilsen have won it 4 of the last 6 times. Then the only three other teams that have won it are Slavia Prague, Liberec and Banik. So, you know, generally you know where it's going to be going. FC Fastav Zlin were only promoted into the top league 2 seasons ago, and last season came, I think, lower mid-table, kind of towards the relegation zone. With 30 points. They've got a 6,500-seater ground, yet are currently on 28 points and are in second place in the league. So it just seems like a great story, and one you hope will be tuning in next season in the Champions League to watch, you know, some English club or some big European club turn up at FC Fastav Zlin.
Czech for Leicester?
Or Hoffenheim?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
But yeah, it seems like a very nice story. It seems like one, you know, this is a club whose record ever finish in the Czech league is 7th with 40 points, and so they're well on track to beat that before the new year.
It'd be interesting to see, Greg, if they're another team filled with youngsters with one experienced person and a coach who's willing to give them a chance.
Well, one team that are Zulte Waregem, who are top of the Belgian League. Almost got there. Almost said, no, not Bundesliga. In the Belgian League. And yeah, they've never won the title in Belgium, I don't think. So another one to keep an eye on there.
Yeah.
They could be another pioneer.
They could be.
Advice for future managers listening. Build your team around an experienced player with a bunch of young players. Yeah. Give them a chance and you see what happens.
Yeah, and then Squawker will write about you, apparently. fantastic. We're going to finish up with something a bit more conventional. Some news from the England camp before England plays Spain tomorrow. Jordan Henderson is going to captain the side versus Spain. Mo, thoughts on that? The first time he played as captain, it was... There was a bit of a back heel situation which almost led to a goal for Slovakia, but
you know, he's playing well this season, I guess.
Good captain for Liverpool?
Yeah, sure. Well, no, really, Jurgen Klopp's the captain on that side, isn't he? Yeah, you know. Look, he's a good player. Does he ever fill me with confidence as a captain? I think maybe sometimes we overstate the importance of captain, but I think for a fledgling team like England's, who've got a lot of young players, I don't think you need like a one guy to go, "Oi, stand there." I think you need a collective spirit, a collective...
Haven't we just said you do need one of those? You need a veteran to build a young side around.
For a club, Okay. International football, I think it's a bit different when you have a young side. They're only getting together a few months. They don't need one old guy going... I mean, you know, look at how Spain took off once Raul got punted into the wilderness. Mm. So I think it's fine. I mean, although I would say, you know, I think Julian Lopetegui is going to take Gareth Southgate and teach him a thing or two tomorrow.
Yes, George. we have to talk. What are the thoughts for the Spain game? Because Spain are looking... red hot.
So Spain looking very good. I think Ander Herrera came out and saying that we have the best midfield in the world as a kind of a
battle. They have for about
as a battle
15
cry.
Years.
It's like a battle cry against England. And I think everyone's sitting there saying, yes, Ander, we know that. That's fine. we're not going to challenge you there. A word on the captaincy thing, though. I think it's just... the whole thing is a bit of a farce, to be honest. Like, why have we got a captain who's only going to play games... like 50% of our games, so we keep having the same merry-go-round every single time he's dropped in Wayne Rooney. Like, mm-hmm. if he's not going to play every week as an international player, then he shouldn't be captain. Mm-hmm. It's plainly obvious that. Henderson's basically the only possible alternative because he plays every game for club and country.
Basically, yeah.
And he's the only one of the only captains in there.
And can shout, yeah. probably.
Eric Dyer, maybe.
I mean, well, Stones is the one who everyone's... Yeah.
Johnny Stones.
But I'd expect tomorrow, you know... Everyone's predicting, you know, as Mo was saying, an easy Spain victory. England very rarely get well beaten at Wembley. Mm. It's not really in Spain's interests probably to beat us 4 or 5-0, so it'll probably be a spirited 1-1 draw and everyone will get very excited about Gareth and we'll move on to group stage elimination under Southgate in a couple of years.
See, I don't know though. I think Wembley seems to G a lot of Spanish players up. The Spanish, I remember... English grounds in general. I remember when in 2012 when the Athletic Bilbao players were come to play Man United at Old Trafford, they were acting like tourists before the game. They're like, "We're Old Trafford, everyone! It's amazing!" And they played out their minds. And after the game, they were like, "We're Old Trafford. We played well." You know, so I think there could be an element of you know, and Spain usually do well in England. They play very well. Iniesta, of course, made his mark in international football with that great goal against England at Old Trafford. I think it was. You know, so. There's a lot to it, and I think...
So if we close the gift shops, then we're going to win. Is that
that's the key. No selling Queen's Guards.
No selfies before the pitch. England victory.
Yeah. Speaking of Southgate, Greg, he says he wants the England job now. He's changed his tune, which was, I mean, mind-numbingly predictable. Mm. And he's also said that the FA should decide within a month, which seems to put a very cramped timeline for few candidates. He's got Wayne Rooney's vote, which obviously means a lot in the FA boardroom. Do you think he should get the job? Do you care?
Who else is going to get the job? Like, the point. You know, so I think that's the main thing. I mean, the idea of Ralf Rangnick coming in excited me beyond belief. But it's not going to happen, is it?
Mm.
So
maybe
yeah.
Nagelsmann.
Well, no, don't. You don't want to stick a young coach. Exactly. It's like this idea of sticking Eddie Howe in the England job. Like, why do you want to ruin him? Yeah. That's an awful thing to do.
Let's ruin Southgate instead.
Yeah, well, he's a kind of Middlesbrough already did that, didn't it, really? Yeah. So, I mean, he seems like a nice guy. The system he was playing in under 21s is really cool, and they're still playing it. It's quite an interesting way of playing.
Under 21s are doing brilliantly.
Yeah, and they're playing his system. They're playing the style of play he put into place. Mm. So it's also weirdly the formation that Hodgson tried to play before the Euros when he had like the split strikers and Rooney coming from deep. It's just those players didn't really suit that system. No. So Hodgson was kind of
tail wagging the dog. But anyway, be interested if Southgate gets a job, because it's kind of a victory for English kind of coaching path up through the levels.
England
and all that,
DNA, as they call it. Yeah, St. George's.
I don't know if you can call Southgate an England job a result for English coaches, considering the way it came about that he was even up for the role. So,
But it'll at least be a kind of like, it'll be a bit of encouragement, won't
if
it?
He if he does well, it'll be a victory for English coaches.
He just has to play Marcus Rashford, and that'll basically sort everything
out. Make United fans happy.
As a forward,
up front. Why doesn't he play the under-21s in the senior team? He seems to know them well. Just, you know, gets a young team, builds around an older player.
I'd guess that the fact that the England squad seems to never change, despite who's in charge, suggests that maybe there's not much creative freedom for the manager.
Mm.
Yeah, it would be interesting to the under-21s, because they play together very, very well. That is all we've got time for. Thank you for joining us for this review of European football with a little bit extra thrown in. We'll be back on Thursday with a Premier League preview. Mr. Greg Johnson will be presenting.
Ayop.
In the meantime, subscribe to us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, and thanks very much for joining us. Bye-bye.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend, because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
COTA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran, or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.